Hey there, it's Jeff Seymour, and welcome to a Real Life Actor Podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about telling stories of woe, whether it's a scene or a monologue. I'll explain. I'm back. Yeah, it's been a while since my last podcast. I've had a lot going on, and I've started a new series on Instagram at Real Life Actor. I'm doing acting truth bombs, videos in 2 minutes or less. If you haven't seen them, I highly suggest you do. I think I have about 75 on there so far. I am in Los Angeles at the moment, and I am offering live classes. On Sunday, I'll be opening a second one as that one is full. But I've been offering free audits recently. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you'd like to just come by and watch what goes on in one of my live classes, just contact me at jseymour878@gmail.com. I also have my continuing international Zoom classes. I offer 3 a week at different times, so you can hit all the time zones around the world. And it's a beautiful international crew of actors. You know, it's like the UN of acting classes. I love doing them. All right, now we're up to speed, and I want to talk today about telling stories of woe. You know, or when you have a monologue that has to do with some kind of traumatic situation that occurs, with your character, and now you're having to portray that. I bring this up because the other day I had an actor that I work with who's very talented. He's a lovely actor. He asked me to look at a self-tape that he did, and it was a monologue talking about a horrific thing that occurred to him as a child. In this particular scene, and it was a 7-minute monologue, so it was quite a bit of writing, and he did a lovely job with it. He asked me for my comment, and anytime anyone does that, I know they want me to be real and not hold back, so this is what I said. I said that about 30 seconds in, because of the tone and the way he was telling the story, I knew where this particular bus was headed. And so any story, any horrible, tragic thing that was about to unfold in this particular story wasn't really going to surprise me. As horrific as it was, it had the tone of a horrific story. And I knew where it was going. Now, what am I getting at? Well, you know, we want to keep the audience intrigued always. We want to surprise them. We don't want them necessarily to know where things are going because that's what keeps the audience leaning in and interested. The story was horrific, as I said. One thing I've noticed with actors when they handle these kinds of stories, when you pick up something where, you know, you lose your parents, or you get attacked in a particular scene. It's just horrible stuff. There's no getting around it. It's terrible. The weight on the actor to shoulder that responsibility of being able to intellectually and emotionally convey this horrific scene is always something that actors, anyone who's serious, takes seriously. You think, my God, this is one of those kinds of situations. It's terrible. The way it manifested in the scene that he sent me was, you know, emotionally, I thought he was right on target. His sincerity in telling the story was right on target. But my comment and observation was, it was too slow. It was 7 minutes, and I said, you should try a version that is 6 minutes. Now, that sounds like a big difference, but it really isn't. I mean, when you have a 7-minute story, it isn't that hard to clip it down to 6 minutes, particularly if, my observation was, it was very, very slow. Now, I don't mean to disrespect the horror of the story, But you know, I call my approach the real life actor because I always turn to the book of life when I'm wondering, how are these things handled in real life? In my time on this earth, I have heard many horrific stories, unfortunately, whether they were on the news or whether they were in real life. And being that I've always been interested in acting and I've always watched human behavior, even as a kid, this was my thing. It's always been my thing. I've always made mental notes. I've always seemed to come outside of myself for a moment and always kind of clocked what was actually going on because it's been fascinating to me my whole life. It's been like the number one hobby of mine, you know, collecting in my mind these human experiences and really understanding why people do what they do. And so I've made this particular observation in my life. Generally, I never see people taking this amount of time to tell the horror story that they tell. Why is that? I've made this observation. And I've had to tell a few of my own in my life, unfortunately. They've been there, they've happened, they happen to us all. One observation is, people generally don't want to relive it in real time. We don't. When I go to tell that story about what happened to me in my life, there are many reasons why I don't want to relive it in that particular moment. And by reliving it, I mean really stretching it out, really kind of going through it, taking the time to see everything as it occurred. You know why? Because it was horrific and I already did that in real life. I really don't have any desire to do it again right now. I don't want to do that for many reasons. One, because I don't. Two, I don't want to put people through the exact same experience in real time. Now, I may want to communicate what happened to me. I may want the person to get absolutely what occurred and the horror of it. But I don't need to take them through it step by step. And we just don't do that. Now, are there exceptions? Sure. The incident could have just occurred, and now I am at the police station right afterwards, or I'm being questioned by the police, or a psychologist, and it is fresh, it just occurred, and they need to know blow by blow what occurred. A human is more apt to really slow it down and recall what happened for the sake of being absolutely accurate, and it just happened, so it's going to be kind of hard not to relive it right now. That's kind of the point of the exercise, actually. Other than that, my observation in real life is that people just want to get on with it for the sake of being able to share what occurred, but with the knowledge that if you simply tell people what happened, and I don't mean simply in some offhand, you know, non-caring way. I mean, obviously, it was something important. You're sharing it. You do it with all due respect. But there's no reason to belabor these moments because all you have to do is mention what occurred, these blood-curdling moments, and you know, intelligent, emotionally intelligent people around you will get it. Now, I'm going to give you a for instance. This has nothing to do with me, and forgive me for using this term and this terminology, but if someone were to tell you about, for instance, when they were a child and they had this horrible thing that occurred when they visited a neighbor who happened to be a pedophile, and he tells you that he used to play this game with me called the tickle game. You know, you really don't have to go much further, and you certainly don't have to relive that moment for people to be able to extrapolate from that one phrase, those two things, the pedophile next door and the tickle game, to understand what horror probably ensued. That is how most people tell these kinds of stories. They don't want to relive it. They lived it once and it was horrible. They don't want to go through it every time they share the story. Now, someone might say, well, yeah, then why share it? Well, just because you want to tell someone, a loved one, a new friend, someone that you feel is important to you that you'd like to share this story with, that might kind of perhaps illuminate how you became who you became. You want to give the details. You want to share the moment, but you don't want to go through the pain every time. Are there exceptions? Of course. Life is fickle. Life is, you know, 7-8 billion people in the world. People are going to do all sorts of things. But I'm just talking more often than not. Generally, when I've heard people tell stories, they just tell it to you. And they let the chips fall the way they do because I think if you go into your own life and you recall the times you've told a similar story, a horrific story, something bad that occurred to you, to a friend, you'll realize that you kind of just tell it. And know that the people around you listening to it will get it. So why does the actor do it? Well, one of the reasons is the weight of the scene. The dutiful actor feels that, well, it's my job. I've got to, my goodness, if you don't relive the moment that your parents were killed in front of you and you were attacked and, you know, brutally raped by these men, and, you know, if you don't relive that moment, then when do you relive these moments? Well, as I said before, I don't think that's anyone's interest that tells these stories. I certainly wouldn't want to. And I think if you think about it, you probably wouldn't want to. Why does the actor do it? And here's my answer. Because the actor really doesn't have any skin in the game. It didn't happen to them. There's nothing for them not to relive. It doesn't matter. They can tell you a very moving story that goes in depth, and it can go on, and they can pause, and they can cry, and they can go through all of these moments, but when it's over, well, they can walk over to the craft service table and get themselves a nice bagel with some cream cheese and, you know, get on with their day. There is no psychological scarring. There is no scab that they're picking at when they do that story. So you see, that is the difference. It means nothing to the actor. So of course they can do it. Why wouldn't you do it? You get this aria of a emotional scene with an emotional monologue where you get to recall this one of the most horrific nightmares that could ever happen to a child, a person, a woman, a man. You feel dutifully obligated to lean into it and to give it all the weight and psychological recollection that you possibly could. My point here is that people generally don't do it because it actually happened, and they don't want to relive it every single time they bring it up. And people do bring up horrific stories. I remember an actor I was working with just, you know, outside of class when I was somewhere teaching, for whatever reason, wanted to tell me a horrific story that occurred to her involving some men when she was younger, and it's nothing I will repeat. But I could not believe what these people did. It was just the worst. And as she told it to me, she just told it to me. As I was listening to it, I mean, it was so horrific. I felt that if I even responded to it, if I even said, oh, I'm so sorry or something, that it just wouldn't be enough. It took the air out of my chest. I couldn't even respond. It was so horrific. But what I remember about that moment was just the way she simply told me. She wasn't trying to elicit certain emotions from me. She knew that the weight of the story would not be missed on me if she just told it to me. She did her best for me not have to live through it with her, but to comprehend and kind of understand what she went through. And then also who she is today as a result. And I must say, one of the things that really got me was her obvious ability to persevere and become this incredible woman that she was in the face of a story that she told me. I don't mean to trivialize this story by using it in this podcast at all, but I do like to use, whenever I can, real life instances where I can mention what happened, because these things occurred and I always pull from real life. And, you know, she's not the only one that has shared this kind of a story with me. I was still blown away. I couldn't even speak. And it was with me for days. And it wasn't because of the tricky way she told me. No, it was just that she knew, I guess, that if she shared the story with me, factually what went on, there was no need to add anything to it. And in a way, I was more bowled over by it somehow. It hit home even harder because I realized that it made me think about how people, I'm sure since the dawn of time, of course, have had to persevere through the most horrific circumstance. And what it says about the human race and our ability to just keep on keeping on, to just pick ourselves back up, and just to get on with living. There were so many more things that were triggered in me when she told me the story the way she did than if perhaps I'd seen an actor portray that same moment. So what is my point? I think that when you come to these moments, these monologues, these scenes, you always want to try and do it with the same dignity and wherewithal of the human being that actually had to go through it. And I think that if you search your memory for stories you've heard about people that were in battle, people that had to go through horrific circumstance, losing their family, their loved ones, their child, I think you will see that what I'm trying to talk about today has come up more often than not. But the key for the actor is this. You do it because you don't really have anything to lose. And you imagine everything to gain by being able to really dredge up all of these emotions and, you know, live through it again in real time. But when I watch that stuff, there's just something in me that says, yeah, I don't believe it. This feels like a performance that is rooted in something that never happened. And so, you know, you could do this again and again and again because you really aren't losing anything. It's not ripping a piece off you every time. You have no skin in the game. So, for all of you actors that are dealing with these kinds of scenes, these kinds of monologues, I would just ask you to think about that. You know, the real life actor, this is really something where I have come from constantly looking at life and thinking, how do we really do these things? How do these things really occur? Now, I know there's a theatricality in theater, and I know that there is, you know, as Hitchcock once said, you know, it's not a slice of life, it's the frosting. I get all that. I understand that. But at the same time, I think that authenticity and the more we can kind of keep in step with what people are familiar with in these moments, it subtly skews an audience towards something that is so believable they don't even imagine for a moment they're watching acting, and keeps them away from what they may not realize, but subtly down deep know, this ain't necessarily real. I'm watching a performance. And that to me doesn't nearly hit as hard as it does when I watch these kinds of scenes occur in life. And so I think if we really want to hold a mirror up to life, we should always be kind of reviewing these kinds of thoughts. You know, how does this stuff really happen and why? That's what I have to say today, folks. It's good to be back on the podcast. I'm going to keep them coming. And check out my Instagram videos if you haven't already. And if you're in one of these areas that I'm going to be doing some training, I hope to see you there. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. I'm Jeff Seymour. If you'd like to find out more about the Real Life Actor approach, I have a book on Amazon, The Real Life Actor. Or you can go to the Real Life Actor website, reallifeactor.com. It's all there. Thanks again for listening.